Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We don't have a Friday morning GM for you exactly this week, but Voss and I are recording two episodes today looking at the Ravens' depth chart after the draft and UDFA signings. So we're looking at the offense in this episode. Hope you'll join us for the defense episode, which comes next as well. Voss, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Doing great, my friend. This is always a fun exercise to take a look at the depth chart right up to the draft and see where could they still add, where are they strong, and really how it looks. Every year, I always look forward to this, but even back to my days of writing for Baltimore Beatdown, this was always one of my favorite articles to put out every year.
Yeah, lots of stuff. Certainly, the PR department puts out a depth chart a little bit later. They do so, used to be in the Harbaugh era anyway, under very strict rules to put the rookies at the bottom of the depth chart for each position, even when it sometimes didn't make any sense at all, like, you know, with a first round draft pick. I wonder what they'll do, but I imagine that Ioane, for example, is going to be listed as the starting right guard, I would presume, or left guard, that could be too, but we'll be on the starting guard spot. But anyway, let's start with easy stuff. We'll go to the quarterback position. Lamar Jackson, number one. Tyler Huntley, number two. They do have two UDFA signings, Diego Pavia and Joe Fagnano.
Fagnano, I believe.
Fagnano, okay.
Pavia is the big name here, obviously. He was at the Heisman ceremony, had a big year, had a big time. So I'm going to reference, and I might as well give Gordon McGinnis a shout out. He has a Substack, I believe it's called Ravens on 5, and he had some notes as far as some of the UDFAs. So since I stole some of his notes, I'm going to give him some credit there. But Pavia had a good big-time throw rate. He's undersized. He's short. That's why he wasn't drafted. He also seems a little bit immature from some of the comments he's made in the media, specifically after the Heisman ceremony.
6 feet 207, so compact by today's standards. That's certainly true. What is there to say? Big time throws are not the only thing. He has 29 and 8 touchdowns, interceptions. And let's see what he had for a passer rating for the year, 116.3. So certainly that's fine. A player who I think at best is heading for a practice squad spot. I don't think there is a third quarterback spot for him. I think there's only two on the roster. And if you look through, the Ravens are always kind of constrained for positions. And we'll talk about that a little bit, but I have only two spots going to quarterback. And Pavia or Fagnano, the one they like, will end up on the practice squad. We hope. And it may be a case that a player like Pavia has other options and maybe will go somewhere else.
Could be. I certainly agree with your comment that I expect two to be on the 53 week one. One thing I guess we'll just touch on here, we don't know what Jesse Minter's plans are for the preseason. Does he want the starters to maybe take a couple series? We don't know that because, you know, Harbaugh did, and then the one year when Dobbins got hurt and then Gus and Marcus Peters got hurt, he wanted to not give them that injury risk. So new system, could play either way, you know. These two backup quarterbacks should see some time in the preseason. That'll help them decide who to keep as the practice squad guy.
Now, I want to point, the Fagnano situation is an interesting one. He has played 7 years of college football, four at Maine, three at UConn. An enviable statistical set of numbers, 94 touchdowns and 18 interceptions over that period. What else would I say about this? He gets rid of the ball fairly quickly. That's his thing. He's more of a traditional size guy at 6'4", 225, but he already turned 25 in March. Does not seem like more than a clipboard holder to me in terms of how he'll be in the NFL, but we'll see. Maybe some team will end up going to him as a pro ready option somehow, at some point in the year with injuries.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to add there, but the 1-2 punch of Lamar Jackson, Tyler Huntley might be the best duo in the league, I'd say. So moving on to running back.
All you got to do is have the best number one.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. Moving on to running back. Obviously, Derrick Henry's the headliner. Justice Hill was brought back. We thought there was a chance that he would be a salary cap casualty. He was not. Rasheen Ali returns. We'll see how the new coaching staff views him. I'm not sure if he has any special traits. Adam Randall, handpicked player by team owner Steve Bisciotti, has some pretty intriguing traits. And then it looks like the undrafted competition is Dante McMillan.
So, and we've got Lucas Scott, a fullback that we'd add to that group. I guess you could put him in the tight end group as well. He could go either, but the Ravens have already talked about moving away from a fullback. So I think he probably will not make the roster. He may be a guy they keep around as a reserve tight end on the practice squad, but just to take care of that quickly. Top two spots, I don't think there's any doubt about. One of the problems the Ravens have had is a lack of a second bell cow back. And so if something were to happen to Derrick Henry, they don't really on the current roster have anybody who could all of a sudden take 18 carries a game. I don't think Rasheen Ali is that guy, and he's probably the closest. Justice Hill is not that guy. And maybe Adam Randall is a little closer to that. Randall has a very weird background. He is a converted wide receiver. He's not even the kind of wide receiver you'd expect him to be. I'd expect him to be, you know, kind of like a tight end or a big slot or that kind of thing. Uh-uh. Outside receiver almost every single snap. Like 85% of his college snaps previously were on the outside at wide receiver. He just couldn't catch the football. And had 6.0 yards per target, bunch of drops, lots of other issues. But he moves to running back. I think of him more as a kind of a tall, not lean build. That's not right. There are who's the Giants running back in the past? I want to say he's Jacobs, but
Brandon,
his name was
Brandon Jacobs.
Brandon Jacobs, that's the guy.
Brandon Jacobs
kind of reminds me of him a little bit of Gus Edwards, although Gus Edwards was more compact in terms of this. So you got a little bit taller version of him, a little bit high cut, but a guy who could, I think, take a larger carry load. In fact, do you really want to talk about his high cut? Like, he looks a little bit like Derrick Henry in terms of his body shape.
We are certainly on the same page. I was going to bring up Brandon Jacobs, and then I was going to say he has a similar shape.
Wow.
But yeah. I think what's intriguing about him is he has the size with the receiving ability. So if he can develop in, especially as a pass blocker, he can really carve out a role as a third down back. But I do agree with you. I'm not sure anybody is going to be the workhorse. I think they go to the street, get an old veteran if that was really the case.
Yeah, and that could happen. He caught 36 out of 49 balls last year, but was only for 5.0 yards per target. So that's really unexciting. That's not even get him the ball in space and allow him to start missing tackles kind of rate. That's just a poor number. So anyway, I think he'll make the team, no doubt.
Yeah, I think he will make the team. They're not going to probably cut the owner's handpicked guy. To me, the question is, do they carry three or do they carry four? And there's probably one roster spot that's sort of up in the air that could go to multiple positions. Could it be the fourth running back versus the 10th offensive lineman, hypothetically? That's probably where it's going to be decided.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And that really is the question. I think there's going to be four tight ends kept, which we'll go to next. Is a pretty set group. They do have one backup guy they brought in, Tyler Petza from Brown, who's a practice squad only guy. And they've had Vokalek and some other guys in the past few years who've been perfectly serviceable. In fact, he got picked up by the Arizona Cardinals in his case. Were guys that were worth being on the practice squad, could have come up for a game or two. Last year they had the guy who was there for the first three or four games, and
he was playing fullback. What was his
name? He wasn't particularly good. In any case, Mark Andrews, Matt Hibner, I would say, is the number two tight end. He is an Andrews replacement. And by the way, don't let anybody confuse you about where these guys are going to play. Matt Hibner played 22% of his snaps in line. He's a flex tight end. Durham Smythe is a blocking tight end. He may be a guy who lines up in the backfield some. He has done that. Never breaks a tackle when he catches the football. He's had 142 career catches with one broken tackle in the career. Mm-hmm. And Josh Cuevas is also a guy who would he's got to make use of his blocking in order to be an impactful player in the NFL. And I think he can also catch the football. Maybe a little bit more upside might be like Nick Boyle, that you have a player there who can be a multi-purpose guy, or Charlie Kolar, multi-purpose guy.
So I was a little bit underwhelmed with the draft haul the Ravens were able to get from the tight end class. You know, they lost a $13 million player, and likely they lost an $8 million player in Kolar. They weren't able to take a tight end until Hibner, who was the 10th tight end off the board, and then Cuevas, who I believe was the 16th off the board, and they were both around the 200 as far as the consensus rankings. So it wasn't, you know, I know you were in excited about potentially a tight end in the first, and some of the guys that we thought were going to go earlier didn't go drafted at all, so that thinned out the class a little bit. So I think this is a place where they could add a veteran. I think I do agree with you that they're going to carry four. I would expect them to carry four, but I do think some veteran competition, especially for Cuevas, will be beneficial for the team. I've been debating with some on Twitter a little bit the last couple of days. You know, Andrews regressed last year, and he hasn't been a model of health. If he were to go down, Hibner, tight end, and a tight end's a hard position to transition because, you know, you're doing multiple functions. I'm not in love with Njoku. He had a down year. Stats were bad. The other name out there is Jonnu Smith. He also had a bad year. He graded poorly. But even if they could find a diamond in the rough type, a Corey Graham of the tight end around the league that has some experience, I would like to see some competition there because I don't want to pencil in day three picks on the 53. I think they should have to earn it.
I mean, I guess that's fair. And they love Hibner. Hibner had a bunch of yak, a really good yards per target in his final year at SMU. A lot of that, I think, is a function of his quarterback, Jennings, who is a dual threat guy, moves around the pocket very well, creates extended plays. And if you look at Hibner's longest plays, they're almost all, well, okay, that's not entirely true, but they have a heavy component of seam routes where he is just lost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's play action on the play or there's an extended play in some. The extended plays, he did do a pretty good job of finding space and presenting himself. I don't have a problem with that. I think he's a potential decent receiving tight end. They said no on two guys who I would have had ahead of him in Michael Trigg and Daquan Wright. But the entire NFL also said no on those guys. And, you know, there's some knucklehead risk with both of them, apparently. And they're both, I mean, Daquan Wright is built like an Adonis, and Michael Trigg has the biggest catch radius you'll ever see from a tight end. So it's really surprising that he could do enough wrong off the field to not end up being a second round draft pick, but that's exactly what he did. In fact, he wasn't drafted at all, which is an unbelievable fall for him. So, but I'm with you. I don't really see a outside the system tight end. I've got expectation of that on the defense at a couple different positions. I don't really honestly see it at tight end. I think they will find their guys from this four, or actually these five, we'll call it. And in particular, Petsa shows like he's a player during the preseason and camp and does the things they want and is a big, he has to be a special teams big and really has to be in his case. And so do the other three, Hibner, Smythe, and Cuevas all need to have that in their resume. Andrews doesn't need to play special teams, but those three need to be on the ability to play on the punt team specifically.
Agreed. And that's definitely something that Hibner brings specifically to his ability on teams. So there's a lot of uncertainty. We don't know what this offense is going to look like. We really don't. You can project what Doyle did at Chicago, but he wasn't the primary play caller. We don't know how much 11 they're going to use, how much 12, how much 13 they're going to use. We don't know what kind of run splits they're going to do. We don't know what kind of formations they're going to use. It's really interesting. And that transitions well into the next position group, wide receiver. You know, is Surratt going to be a big slot? You know, there's a lot of questions there. So wide receiver, do you want to go just all lump them all together or outside, inside?
I mean, to me, there's six guys at the top and there's six guys on the outside looking in. Yeah. So from that standpoint, it's pretty easy to see. This will not be a year for camp darlings at wide receiver unless somebody gets hurt. Should not be a year for that. There's no room for an additional wide receiver to make the team under any circumstances other than injury.
All right, so top six, you know, near locks, we'll call them, or pretty much in written, I guess. Wester, if they don't like him for some reason, but I think he's on the team. So LaJonte Wester, Zay Flowers, Devontae Walker, Rashad Bateman, and the two early round picks, Elijah Surratt and Jacoby Lane.
Yep, those are the six. And you wouldn't give up on a third or fourth round pick. You wouldn't make a fourth round pick like Surratt where it's a duplication without absolutely knowing that, you know, you'd have that discussion literally in the draft room. Are we 100% sure this guy makes our 53? Because if he doesn't, you look like the stupidest people who've ever lived. I mean, you don't want that to happen. So they're both on the team clearly. And Tez Walker, honestly, was kind of a loser in this draft. Bateman might be too in terms of reduced playing time, but I'm concerned about what drafting Lane and Surratt when I expected one guy to be drafted means for Tez Walker's playing time.
I still expect a breakout year from Walker. I do. I think he's going to outplay him. I think he's got 2 years in the system. He's got better speed than both of them. It was interesting that they went for more contested catch types and the X. You know, we were talking pre-draft. We want an X. Well, they got two X's, really. So it's a little bit different from what they've done in the past. You can kind of see the vision of what Declan Doyle wants to do. We'll see how it plays out as far as playing time. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk of, well, they took Surratt, so that means Bateman's getting traded away or this or that. You know, he took a BPA. Just because we're not used to taking BPA wide receiver doesn't mean necessarily that somebody's on the outs. But anyway, we'll talk about the other guys finalizing the depth chart. Dayton Wade, who's sort of a career
practice squad guy,
at this point, right? Xavier Gilroy, who they signed – I think really for the last practices they had, they needed another guy. And I was talking to someone.
I think he was on the team from the preseason last year. So he was around the entire year.
I thought maybe it was a futures contract, but I thought they just signed him like a week before maybe they re-signed him the week before the draft. Anyway, somebody on Twitter was really, really high. I put out a projection on Sunday and he was like, how do you have Surratt ahead of Gilroy? And I said, I guess are you a family relation to Gilroy? But anyway, Cornelius Johnson, a big body guy. And I see two UDFAs, Octavian Smith Jr. and Cortez Bradham. Octavian Smith is more of a inside out hybrid. Braham is more of a perimeter guy.
Braham, yeah. So Braham. Octavian Smith and Jaleel Farouk, did you mention him? Because they got the whole Maryland wide receiver room added in. So
no, I missed that one.
Yeah, unless they cut him already, they might have. But I'll find out Saturday, and we'll have this on the show for that. So it's interesting. It's definitely a local flavor and a team friendly favor to some of the UDFAs they signed. They're doing good. I will say this: the Lane and Surratt thing. I want to go back to for one moment here because that's a pairing that it's not obvious how those guys fit in with Lamar Jackson. I don't care what Declan Doyle wants to do in some sense. Declan Doyle has to adapt to Lamar Jackson to a greater degree than Lamar Jackson needs to adapt to Declan Doyle. I'm going to say that straight out because Lamar's just going to do whatever he wants on the field anyway after the play breaks down. He's going to run around. He's going to make a go. And they're going to go ask him, what are you doing? Just playing ball, coach. Just playing ball. And if they tell him to do anything else, they're reducing the value of Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. So I don't see them being an on-schedule throw team. You know, Jacoby Lane said, what's your favorite route? The fade route. Ravens don't throw any fade routes. They've never thrown fade routes. It's the most anti-Lamar Jackson thing of all time. And the other thing is that you do, with each of them, get a kind of a replacement for what DeAndre Hopkins did for the team last year. You have a guy who can be soloed outside the numbers and create problems in one-on-one matchups. And if those can be guys that Lamar trusts to go get the football, then it could work out. But it's not otherwise something that I think has a lot of value. I think their personal receiving characteristics aren't exactly what I think will create value with Ravens. The one exception is that they're coming into zone, you know, a situation where they're going to face a lot of zone defenses, and they should be able to work like a tight end out of that X or slot position to find space.
Yeah, I was surprised by the Lane pick. We were on live when that one happened, and I was really hoping for Ted Hurst. But going back and thinking about it, both Lane and Surratt have really good hands. So that's a calling card. And Costa said that in years past. The first thing they look for is being able to catch the ball. It's a little bit questionable with Hurst. You know, they could be second play guys, as they call it, with Lamar. I can see that. I can also see Lane being a sacrificial X to clear out space and Surratt being a big slot. So a lot to learn, a lot to uncover as this offseason progresses.
All right, fair enough. Let's move on to the offensive line where a lot of the interesting topics is. The first, let's look at offensive tackle. That's a little less interesting because I think it's a little less more set. And thank goodness, because the Ravens needed something in the draft that was in their favor other than we need everything. They really did not need an offensive tackle. An offensive tackle was an early run position where a lot of players got overdrafted. They've got Ronnie Stanley at left tackle, and we've made the point a couple times, so it's worth saying one more time, that Ronnie Stanley's contract has now been adjusted, so he's effectively committed to through the 2027 season, where there was a realistic chance for a cut and a transition at that point. Roger Rosengarten is a right tackle, and Carson Vinson should be active every game day. I don't see any obvious path for him to lose his job, but it is a new administration. Maybe Ledford doesn't like something about the way he plays tackle, would be the only thing I could see. At the top, any differences there?
No, not at all.
And move on to Emory Jones, I think, becomes the backup swing tackle. And that's what the Ravens really needed, was a guard tackle guy. Now, Emory's only going to play right tackle, would be my guess. Is their left tackle backup would be Vinson. But if they wanted to make a one-for-one switch at right tackle, they could do it with Emory Jones. I think Vinson is actually not the right guy to go over to that side. I think it de-emphasizes what his strengths are. So I think we'd see Emory over there. Emory could be the sixth offensive lineman. Rumor is he's taking snaps at center. Unfortunately, I think he's completely out of the guard competition at this point based on Simpson, who they paid a lot of money to, and Ioane, who they are completely committed to getting their spots.
Based on investment, I would agree. It's a little bit of a shame that we didn't really get to see him, but he still can bring value to the team, as you said, as a sixth offensive lineman, maybe in the center competition, maybe being a four-position backup, Matt Skura was. He's a third-round pick.
You mean
he's a
younger guy, right?
Yeah, what did I say? I meant to say
McCary. Matt Skura, but McCary's
guy. Yeah. I meant to say McCary, yeah. So they did make an interesting – probably their best UDFA signing with Diego Pounds, who allowed zero snaps in 583 pass blocking snaps per Gordon. He had a mid-round grade by most. He was Dane Brugler's 12th offensive tackle on the board and the best top of the entire list of UDFAs. And he's strictly the left tackle in college, played a lot of snaps for a big-time program, so if you're looking for somebody that could push to make the team as a UDFA, he's probably one of them.
My computer's acting very slow here, but I wanted to bring up my notes on Pounds because he's actually a player I looked at, and that's unusual in the players who are still left at the UDFA ranks. Right. But I had some problem with him, I know. It dropped him down fairly far on my board. When I say that, it's still like 15th among offensive tackles. Just 1 second here. Yeah, so offensive tackles, I have Diego Pounds at number 18, which is, it's certainly pretty high. And Brugler having it 15, did you say, or 12?
Mm-hmm. Okay. 15.
Oh, that's
no,
that's,
I'm sorry, 12. He had him at 12.
That's definitely pretty good. He definitely has arm length that's good enough, 6'6", 325, a 5'15", 40, very good jumps, does not have a good three cone, and only benched 21 reps, so he's not really grown man strength yet. Vertically built guy who played his entire college career at left tackle, modest success as a pass blocker and minimal run blocking success. He did have only two flags in his final season at Ole Miss. That's very good for a left tackle. That's an important thing. One every 539 and a half snaps. But that was a big improvement from his first 1,578 college snaps where he had a flag every 121.4 snaps. That's not good. So, played only one snap that was not at left tackle on the thing. Big developmental project, which I didn't really think fit with the Ravens. And honestly, that's probably the reason why I would have him lower than Brugler is they don't need another Carson Vinson. And that's he would be a guy who is a left tackle project probably in the NFL.
Right. So we'll see how they, divvy up preseason snaps. I expect him to be with the team until – roster cutdowns. Do they want to give Vincent all the snaps to give him as much experience as they can? Do they want to maybe showcase Pounds and maybe you could trade him for a draft pick if he has a good preseason? So we'll see how that one shakes out. The other one is Trevante Sylvester, a right tackle who undrafted. And I saw some reports that they gave him a bonus, which is maybe a little bit unusual for a player of his caliber.
Yeah, now I had not heard that, and I have not seen him play, so I'm not going to be able to opine on who he is. But I think you're hitting on the right point in terms of they want to determine who their practice squad guy is and effectively maybe keep him under wraps. But last year, Carson Vinson played about as many snaps as anybody in the entire NFL during the preseason. Right. And that was fantastic for his development. But the Ravens were committed to keeping Carson Vinson. So it really wasn't a question of whether or not, you know, he'd be lost. With these guys, with Lichtenhand, Sylvester, and Pounds, it's a question. Pounds has been heavily drafted, you know, examined during the draft process by other teams. Lichtenhand, you know, a year ago came out Oregon State or Oregon. I forget where he played his ball, but is not a, you know, he's spent an entire year on the practice squad. So there's been an opportunity to poach him. Nobody's done it. And right. Trevante Sylvester, I imagine, if they really like him, they might actually hide him and just let him play, you know, 26 preseason snaps or something. So there's nothing to go on. Whereas a guy like Pounds might play 150. Preseason snaps if they're committed to keeping it.
Right. Yep. Agreed. All right. Let's move on to guard, and then we'll hit the elephant in the room last, if you like. We touched on Venga and Simpson. Behind them, Andrew Voorhees. Now, $3.7 million in potential cap savings.
Yeah.
There's a couple other guys that, I mean, there's no guarantee in my mind that Smythe necessarily makes the team, nor Pinter. So, and they do have guaranteed money. So maybe you let all three go and they kind of offset each other, if you follow what I'm trying to say there. And then behind him is Jared Penning, a player that neither of us have much interest in as far as long-term potential. And the other guard is the seventh-round pick, Bjornstam.
Yeah, Bjornstam, I'm not very excited about it. He'll be 26 in September, so he's been in college forever. He played a lot of it at South Dakota State, where he won two national championships at the FCS level. There was some talk that he could have been drafted in the fifth or sixth round, and that might not have been an unreasonable place. I think it's a shot, and he's played some tiny amount of center. I think at one point maybe might have been in 2020, which I think was his second college season already, by the way, because he sat out a year in addition to playing 6 years. So it's been a couple of guys here, just ancient coming to the team.
That's going to be a theme, I think, for the next, you know, however long. Let me see here, because I did screenshot. Somebody put together, 53 snaps at center in college for Bjornstam. And then Vega had 17.
Yep.
And then we'll get to the other one in just a minute.
All right, so I'm with you on Andrew Voorhees. I think he's at risk of being cut. Emory Jones is a legitimate inside player, I think, and a right tackle backup and a sixth offensive lineman. So he gets mentioned in both groups. And then you have a bunch of guys that I'm just not excited about any of them. And I really don't like the order of the Ravens' internally published Ryan Mink depth chart, which had Danny Pinter at the top. That would be very bad. Corey Bullock, to me, is clearly ahead of him, even without getting playing time. Obviously, you know, Pinter is a 30-year-old guy who they brought in, paid some guaranteed money to. So, I mean, I think a portion of that is desperation. And you think you alluded to that earlier, that they could cut them all if they found like they had the backups. It's not clear that they drafted these backups. I mean, center is the big thing that they really didn't answer in the draft. They did get Nick Dawkins, who is a UDFA. He might be the second best chance to get the starting position, which is scary as hell. I don't really think so. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. I think that Pinter would be probably ahead of him, even though I don't like it. Jovan Gwynn, who came with Ledford, is probably a possibility, certainly to make the team, and I don't know exactly where he'd fit in. We could see a lot of guys snapping the football this summer. And then Bjornsson, it'd be a possibility. And Jared Penning, I don't really believe is a possibility to make the team, but he would be the last guy. If we're naming three tackles to be on the team, and I'm not including Jones then in that group, it should be six guard/center players who would be there. And that includes Emory Jones, who has the tackle backup capability. Who are your six? It's very difficult.
It's like a mosh pit of yeah. I really can't say. I'm not high on Pinter. Like we mentioned before, I want size. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some real potential in Dawkins. He has NBA bloodlines, and he was obviously Vegas teammate, and he has 1,862 snaps at center in college, so he's well experienced. Just as far as that, just to finish that out, Pinter has almost 900 snaps at center. Gwynn has 323, and Bullock has 115.
Wait, you're including college then for Gwynn, because Gwynn's only got 11 NFL snaps.
Yeah. Between college and pros both. And then Bullock has actually played all five positions on the line between college and pros, and center is the least of all the five. He's played more at left tackle, right guard is his primary, left tackle, left guard, right tackle, and then center's last. I do think Bullock is at the top of the pecking order, at least I hope he is. The other, Gwynn and Pinter, I'm not really sure what to make of them. I'm really not. And Bjornsson, maybe he's can get in the mix and be, your raise the floor center option, or at least you're not going to fall off the table potentially. But this is a place where I could see the Ravens signing somebody. There's not a whole lot of great options, or maybe traded for somebody. DaCosta said after the top two, Slaughter and Logan Jones, went off, he didn't think anybody would necessarily make an impact this year. But it's hard to see the guys on this depth chart making an impact this year too.
Yeah, I'm with you. I guess I'm gonna try and do the difficult here and give you six guys. I think Simpson is one. I think Ioane is two. I think Jones is three. I think Bullock makes it for sure as a fourth. And I think you got two spots left. I actually think it's likely, given the quality of these guys, that Andrew Voorhees hangs, even with the additional cost, which is probably not a good thing, but he does have 2 years of runway, so maybe he figures it out, maybe even starts playing center. I just think even at guard, he's probably a next man up. And then if I had to pick among the rest, I'd probably take Gwynn simply because he comes with Ledford. The Pinter signing, they paid him money, so he may well be a guy they keep around. I'll say this. I don't think this is a year where the Ravens keep 10 offensive linemen, not from this group. I don't think they have enough talent. I think it's going to push somebody else off the roster who they'd rather have. So if they kept nine at offensive line, then you get six wide receivers for 15. You got four tight ends, four running backs, and two quarterbacks. I think that makes you gives you a perfect 25 there. And Ravens almost always go 25, 25, and three. I did notice in the Sun that they had 10 offensive linemen and only 24 defensive players.
Interesting. I didn't see that one from the Sun. I don't subscribe to the Sun anymore. I think maybe, when you're weak, you want to carry more guys. So I could see maybe Pounds taking that spot instead of Ali. But best case scenario at this point, as unlikely as it may be, is probably to convert Emory Jones to center. And it wouldn't be the first time a tackle's converted to center. Matt Burke played tackle. Ryan Jensen played tackle. So. Sure. It's going to be a puzzle, a lot of heavy lifting for Ledford coming up starting this weekend at rookie camp.
Yeah, let's say it is quite a lot to be done. We'll talk about special teams here really briefly. And Voss, I'm going to let you hit on this because you're aware of another kicker signing that got made. But Tyler Loop is to my way. I mean, he may have some competition in camp, but unless he is unable to escape his own headspace, I think he easily makes this roster.
I think so. You want to put them in pressurized situations in camp, throughout camp as you can. What are they? Sometimes if the kicker makes the kick, then camp ends early and they all get ice cream or whatever, you know, that sort of thing. And not that that's going to tell you whether he's going to make a kick. That's the thing with Justin Tucker. He had that clutch gene from his rookie year, from the Maha Miracle game. He had that clutch gene. You don't know if Loop has it or not. So the Ravens did have a mini camp invite to New Mexico kicker Luke Drzewski. So we'll see what kind of competition he offers to Tyler Loop at punter. They have Ryan Eckley, the handpicked Randy Brown draftee, who's going to be competing with Elzinga. But I would expect, obviously, the guy drafted, Nick Moores, the stalwart long snapper. And I would assume that LaJonte West is going to be the primary return man. So not a whole lot of intrigue there.
So we've got him, Wester, in the wide receiver group, of course, and that is an important thing. Adam Randall probably ends up returning kicks if he's on the team along with Ali. Possibly Hill gets involved. Hill, they more or less took off special teams because his pass blocking role was too important to take a chance with it. So they may go back to that. I really don't know how they'll do it. But Wester also returned a few kickoffs last year, but he basically is a punt return specialist. So he's not a guy they really want. Doesn't have the frame for taking big hits on the kickoff return team.
They could go to the one back with the up man. Use one of the tight ends as sort of the up man, as they did towards the end of the year. You know, that's another area where there's a lot of uncertainty about how much special teams is going to be prioritized beyond the John Harbaugh era. How many core special teamers are going to be on the team? How many, you know, how are they going to really value it? So we'll see.
That'll be a fun, you know, it's one of the really fun things to see at camp, see how these things develop. And, you know, as we break down the roster, as we see them play in the preseason, there's real portent there. I know people aren't real keen on preseason games. I certainly don't like paying for them. But I do enjoy preseason football, unlike other people, because I enjoy, you know, actually watching some of these guys who are on the fringe of the roster and a lot of times on the fringe of the practice squad trying to make a spot for themselves. So I think that's kind of a cool thing.
Especially with the new regime. I mean, they were really we're going to be, you know, putting our private investigator hats on and trying to really decipher what they're trying to do, because it could go a lot of directions.
A lot of fun this summer. Anyway, Voss, always a pleasure talking football with you. Tell folks where they can talk football online with you if they'd like.
My pleasure as always, Ken. I am on Twitter X at Vasilis Lerikos, VASILISLERIKOS.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, please make use of hashtag film study mailbag. I'll get the question to the appropriate space, whether that's Friday morning GM with Voss and me. That's fine. It could be a 1 to 3 minute video. I'll try and answer it. I could be just try and answer it directly online without going into it in a great detail, or perhaps even it's a question that's worth a podcast of its own. And I'll talk to you about trying to make that happen. Thanks for listening again. And we'll talk to you next time on Friday morning GM.
Thank you.